Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What has almost no natural enemies can grow larger than an adult human within just a couple of years and is the bane of farmers, drivers, and golf course managers on six continents. The answer is the wild boar, a hardy and intelligent cousin of the domesticated hog, which breeds prodigiously, eats voraciously, and trots out into traffic often enough to cause more than 14,000 accidents a year in France alone. So why have these remarkable creatures spread far beyond their original ranges, and what effect have they had on the environment, popular culture and cuisine, even fine art over the past few centuries of history? Jeffrey Green is a poet and author who teaches at the American University of Paris. His new book is called The Golden Bristled Boar, Last Ferocious Beast of the Forest. Jeff, welcome to Think.
Nice to talk to you, Chris. I'm glad to join the program, and as you might know, I've spent a lot of time in Texas, both as a student and coming back and writing about environmental issues there. So it's really a pleasure to be on the program.
Oh, we're
to
very
talk
glad.
About wild boars.
So these days you live, at least on weekends and holidays, in this old presbytery in Burgundy, and your obsession with the golden bristled boar started when your charming neighbor, like somebody out of Central Casting, it sounds, gave you a gift wrapped in what looked like a body bag.
Well, I don't know if he's charming to us and, you know, a wonderful neighbor. He's a woodsman and a hunter and somebody who grew up in the area. And but when you move into the countryside like that, people bring you gifts all the time, whether it's just vegetables in their gardens or, you know, a bottle of wine or something. Gifts sort of show up almost magically, but this time I was just meeting with Monsieur Delano, and he gave me this just bag, plastic bag with a large piece of meat in it. I didn't know what it was. And it was such a surprise because it was really almost a half of a wild boar that he had put into my lap. And so once I had to deal with that piece of meat, it sort of triggered the idea for this book.
And when you say deal with that piece of meat, he left it to you to butcher the thing yourself.
Yeah. I mean, we were just coming in and, you know, the first thing they do is offer you a aperitif in France, and it's just part of the social order of things, and people are very generous. And then he just goes and gets this piece of meat and just drops it in my lap. And then it had its bristles and just, you know, all the body parts there that I had to deal with. And so I became, just through the process of taking that meat and working through the anatomy of it, being a terrible butcher myself, I just didn't know what I was doing. I began wondering about this creature that was happens to have a population explosion going on right in our backyard.
What is the relationship between the many varieties of wild boar that live these days all over the world and the domesticated pigs that we might see on a farm?
It's a huge question. It's, you know, man and the wild boar have had a very long relationship going back as far as was the third animal that was domesticated after the caprines. But it was also a lot like the wolf that became the dog. These were animals that were around encampments, whether it was in Paleolithic times. And once you know something about a wild boar, they are very curious, but they're scavengers, and I'm sure they were taking advantage of scavenging in the area, and they were not so difficult to begin to domesticate. So, and there's a lot that's been learned about domestication points throughout Europe and Asia, about Neolithic sites, just from this process of domestication. So there's a very close genetic relationship between both between the original Eurasian wild boars and what we know as the domestic pig. And so, and now there are also hybrids that that exist. It's a really large question, and in Texas, for example, you have both feral pigs, domestic pigs that have gone wild, and a lot that have that still exist even back from the time of DeSoto. He wasn't just an explorer; he was trying to set up civilizations or encampments in the United States. He traveled with boars, and Columbus did, and LaSalle in Texas, and not boar so much as the swine, but they were animals that went wild and became feral hogs. It's a huge problem down there. But the whole question of domestication and the original wild boars is very interesting because the domestic animals revert back within a matter of days once they go wild into some of the getting some of their original physical characteristics.
So what starts to change over time?
In terms of
their characteristics, it's not even a matter. You're not even describing that they're evolving over generations. You're saying
no, they're one of the animals that Darwin describes quite a while back about when he wrote a book about domestic animals or domestication and how the animals change. But wild boars have something called phenotypic plasticity, which means that once they go back in the environment, the environmental change actually changes their morphology and their the growth of fur and reacquiring what they some of the native characteristics some of the characteristics of the early animal the original animal the Eurasian wild boar.
So they're omnivores and will eat whatever they can get their snouts on, which is a huge issue for farmers, and not just in this country but all over the world.
What I loved, there was I forgot who. Who said this, but someone said that wild boar, if there's a calorie, the wild boar will eat it. And, you know, and that's basically it. I mean, they can eat anything we do and much more. They're primarily vegetarians, and they do love munching on corn and munching on wheat and crops, and they cause, well, in Texas, they cause about $1 billion a year in damages.
And we have millions of them roaming around this state.
Well, Texas is particularly hit by the problem, and it's a problem they're not going to be able to resolve. They have just a huge population, particularly in the south and the east, of what's called feral hogs. And these animals their origins come back from even the time, well, of DeSoto and even with the Mexicans bringing up their swine up into Texas to protect them actually from Indian raids. And also introductions maybe even by LaSalle, who he had a kind of a disastrous time in Texas. But it happened to be a pioneer animal that worked very well because the animal could feed off the land and could run free range, and it would cause for the settlers the amount of supply of nourishment was pretty minimal in comparison to some other animals. So they could somebody like DeSoto could move around and try to set up settlements but he would move with a herd of pigs or swine that would be able to feed as they go, and was the perfect kind of settlement animal as well. And that's why they adapted so well once they were introduced into the Americas.
And they do particularly well in coastal areas.
Yes, because they love water. I mean, they just love the water and the muck, and coastal areas are very, particularly in Texas, are fecund with, particularly a place like Matagorda, where I happen to run into a bunch of feral hogs there one Halloween. It was just a complete surprise, but they came out en masse, and they have a large problem down there. But, you know, they can go running around clamming. They eat, you know, the roots of cattails. They cruise by alligators. That doesn't bother them. They'll eat, you know, they have such a large range of food sources. And they're also a huge problem because of that, too. And particularly if there's nesting birds that are near the ground, they or turtles that might be endangered, they feed off of those as well, and that's why they're an environmental problem.
Jeffrey Green is my guest. He's a poet and author who teaches at the American University of Paris. His new book is called The Golden Bristled Boar, Last Ferocious Beast of the Forest. We'll resume our conversation with Jeff in just a minute. You can be part of it by calling in to 1-800-933-5372. Perhaps you have a boar tale to share, or you have a question. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Right now, while we take this brief break, we want to encourage you and thank you for becoming a member of the station. If you have not done so yet in this campaign, you can get to us online at kera.org or make a contribution over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. We do, Jeff Whittington, have copies of The Golden Bristled Boar available this afternoon.
We do. You can get your very own copy when you join the station today with a membership contribution of $120. Use your credit card or sign up for the sustaining membership. It becomes just $10 a month. To take advantage of that. The book is very interesting. It's very intriguing.
We both read it.
Yeah, we really enjoyed it, and I know that you will too if you're enjoying this conversation. Just call 888-694-6931 or go to kera.org and make that contribution. And we'll thank you with a copy of Jeffrey Green's book, The Golden Bristled Boar. I want to thank Robert Townsend in Dallas for contributing, Carla Boyle in Richardson. Also, Kay Allen in Colleyville and Elaine Wilshuson in Fort Worth. Thank you so much for doing your part.
Also, way to go, Barry and Sharon Goldblatt in Plano, Tracy McFadden in Mesquite, Laura Lipscomb in Irving, and David White in Dallas. Thank you all so much.
We've heard from almost 700 listeners during this campaign so far. We are just in the middle of the second day of the campaign, too, which is really great. So many people have called. And don't forget, when you call or contribute online, you get automatically entered into this sort of succession of iPad 2 drawings. There are going to be, I think, 7 or 8 more drawings over the next few days. We're drawing once every day for the first 9 days of the drive, and everyone who contributes is entered. You can read the rules online at kera.org. You can also enter there without making a contribution, because legally you're not required to make a contribution to get in the drawing. However, we hope that you will do your part when you visit kera.org.
It only takes a couple of minutes, and you get to decide how much you want to spend for your, it's almost like a subscription to KERA. You can get to us online at kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931. As we mentioned earlier, we have copies of this really interesting little gem of a book by Jeffrey Green called The Golden Bristled Boar, Last Ferocious Beast of the Forest. Those are available this afternoon as a thank you at or above the $120 level. We also still have copies of last hour's book by Christopher Lane, The Age of Doubt. So when you go online or when you call that phone number, if you want one of the thank you gifts, just let us know and we will make sure that you receive that. We really appreciate your contribution. We'll be back in just a minute with Jeffrey Green. Again, the number to call, 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, an evening graduate program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
Thank you. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is poet and author Jeffrey Green. He teaches at the American University of Paris. His new book is called The Golden Bristled Boar, Last Ferocious Beast of the Forest. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Jeff, you have this great quote in the book from an artist who said, "The wild boar is an animal that stirs fear and passion." I have to confess that I was excited about getting to say ferocious beast multiple times during this hour. How ferocious are they?
Well, partly, I guess, if anybody who will see the cover will see a certain irony in it. Because
it's cute.
It's kind of a very engaging boar. And I have to say, I've petted boars, and you know, they're very, very intelligent animals, very smart, engaged, and with many wonderful powers of sense and hearing. And but they are very social animals, and they are very interested in people once they become connected with them, just as pigs do too. And
so they've been known to like run into shopping malls and schools.
But I have to say, this weekend I was walking in the woods, and with my sort of gut, my grandson walking, he's 17-year-old, and we're walking in the woods, and when these two boars just ran right in front of us, our hearts stopped.
Mm.
And so they are very powerful animals, and they're animals that will defend themselves practically like no other animal. And the males are very dangerous with their tusks. They're very sharp. And the females will defend their young. So they can be dangerous. Mainly they flee from you. But if they're cornered, they can be dangerous, and they can, and I've even had them charge at me, so I get the feeling of what, you know, what that would be like.
What do you do when a wild boar charges at you?
Well, it was going back to Delano. He even had this maneuver where you're supposed to sort of turn your side to them so that they don't get your femoral artery between your legs, because that's one of the things that would be dangerous. But the fact is that they run from you, mm-hmm, almost all the time. It's only when they're wounded or cornered or the females are protecting their young. Ordinarily, they're very, very difficult to see because they are evasive.
How did your neighbor Delano, he's an inveterate boar hunter. What's the process, at least in France?
The licensing?
Well, no, not the licensing, but I mean, do they just, there's dogs involved, right? And people have shotguns?
Yes, they use dogs. And dogs, this is one of the issues that I bring up in the books, because in a way, hunters find it very exciting, and it's an art almost to use dogs, as my dogs are barking in the background.
Also intelligent, noble animals.
They use, it's a whole cult about training dogs to be good boar hunting dogs, because there's certain dogs that track, and there's certain dogs that bay, and certain dogs that catch, and they're different breeds, and it's amazing how many different kinds of dogs that they bring in. But essentially it ends up being a dog, an animal fight. And for example, knife hunters are dependent on having the animals caught and sort of held until the knife hunter can come up and stab the animal.
Is everything okay?
Everything okay? My poor dogs, like two Malteses and a Cavalier Conchoro in Paris.
Very nice. Well, let's take a quick call. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Bo on the line in Denton. Hey, Bo.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thanks.
Well, hey, I was just listening in, and you happened to mention the area that I grew up in South Texas, Matagorda, and
yes,
the massive problem that they have down there with the boars, and being a rice-producing part of Texas, it's a huge problem. And I guess my question for you is, I mean, these guys multiply rapidly. And do you know why states don't try to encourage more management of them, encourage hunters to get out there and try to manage more of the population that can grow so rapidly and do that $1 billion like you talked about in damage? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Bo. Yeah, they have 16, the sows can have as many as 16 piglets a year.
16, excuse me?
The sow, boar sows can have 16 piglets a year. Is that right?
Well, they're more like eight or
eight,
so.
Okay.
I mean, at the most, but they can have it twice a year. That's the big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the caller brought up a very important question, because I'm traveling across the whole country, and people are asking me in Chicago, when I'm going to the Academy of Sciences and places like that, well, what does this have to do with the Midwest? Well, they have a big, you know, they're already appearing up in Minnesota. And in places like Wisconsin, you think, God, you know, what are they doing there? Or and in places like Missouri, where they put out, you know, the Department of Wildlife put out the order that had just three parts shoot on site, because they have this big worry that they're going to have the problems that they have in Texas and Hawaii and South Carolina and California, where they're out of control, basically.
So shooting them for food is not good enough, is that right? It's just, it doesn't...
No, it's really amazing. There was a... Mike Bodenchuk, the Texas director of the USDA Wildlife Services, kept saying, you know, he's sort of responsible for also the abatement program that's going on in Texas. But he said... And he also advises these other states. And there's 44 states right now that have had documented presence of feral pigs in their four provinces in Canada. And I even have pictures of them up in Canada. He says that there's no way you can just eat your way out of this problem. Trap them, they do process them, they do ship them to places, but the whole process is very expensive. And one of the things that I've been interested in is the Hunters for the Hungry program. I mean, if you're going to shoot these animals down with helicopters and all that, and you have all that meat resource, certainly it can be distributed, but the problem is that they only accept venison, and it's because they can't get enough support from, you'd need a veterinarian to come in, and they only want the animals that have been trapped to be inspected for disease.
Because they carry, like, trichinosis and swine flu and different things?
Trichinosis, you know, and streptococcus and leptospirosis and, you know, brucellosis. I mean, they carry a bunch of different diseases.
So if you get a clean one, Jeff, do they taste like pork?
No, well, they do, but they taste much more flavorful, actually, I think. They have more depth of flavor, more a little bit of the wildness, the nuttiness, the taste of the forest. And it's you know, I discuss this quite a bit in the book too, because I bring in cuisine and even have recipes in the book, and I try to do a sort of an international little panorama of dishes, because there are dishes in Japan, for example, that are wonderful, and in Europe and China and all places. That pork is the 38% of the meat consumption in the world, particularly in China and in Europe. So I think, you know, it's going to be a huge problem in Texas, but there still must be something to be done with the meat. That's probably the issue.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next on the line to John in Dallas. Hey, John.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering if you could give some tips on what to do if you encounter one. I know with, you know, their behavior is bound to be a little bit different from bears. I know with most predators like lions or bears, one thing you don't want to do is start running because it triggers their predator instincts. But with bears, I mean, you try to make yourself look bigger. You make some noise, maybe. Don't stare them in the eyes. But what do you do for boars?
Well, first of all, they are not going to... They really do run from you. There are not too many situations you're going to get into. One thing is, you know, the old joke where the dog goes out and, you know, off the leash, and then out comes a boar running after the dog, and the dog runs behind you. But the only advice is, you know, if they're really coming, is to turn your side to them, because you just want to protect vital arteries between the legs. The males tend to dig upward towards your inner thigh, and that's where you're pretty vulnerable. But, you know, there's so few people that are killed by wild boars. People get bitten, yes, and one of the problems is over here, wild boars have entered the cities and into people's homes and into department stores and in the suburbs. And the Wall Street Journal did this amazing article about how many wild boars are in Berlin right now since the wall came down. Now they're able to move even more freely. But the fact is, they're not, unless they're injured and they come and are defending themselves, they're not going to be coming towards you. Of course, the thing that everybody talks about is climb a tree. And so to get away from them, but it's not like they're out to kill you. I think they're just out to defend themselves, and it's a little different than, say, if you get in the hands of a grizzly bear.
Jeffrey Green is my guest. He's a poet and author who teaches at the American University of Paris. His new book is called The Golden Bristled Boar, Last Ferocious Beast of the Forest. We'll talk with Jeff more in a couple of minutes. Right now, if you would like to get on the line to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can drop an email to think@kera.org. We do have a couple of minutes right now. We're taking a pause because we are in our spring membership campaign. You can get your membership renewed or restored, or perhaps you can start a membership for the very first time simply by going online to kera.org. You click the support button, it asks how much money you want to contribute, and you do so. It just takes a couple of minutes. You can also do your membership over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. We do have copies of Jeff Green's book, The Golden Bristled Boar, available today as a thank you at or above the $120 contribution level. You know, the thing about public radio is that it really is a partnership. When you get involved by making a contribution of money, you help to secure the future of public radio. We would do this for free if we could, but we can't. There are costs associated with bringing you this programming that we cannot eliminate. And so your contribution makes it possible for us to be here for you all the time to bring you really interesting topics, things that you might not have thought you were interested in, and then you kind of get drawn in. You know, Jeff and I get these huge stacks of books every week, people who want to be on the show, and you might not think when you first see a book about the golden bristled boar that you would be intrigued, but it's fascinating. And the picture really is, it's a female, and she's just adorable.
It's an important topic here in Texas, and we're covering it because it's fascinating, and it's a great story. The stories in the
book. Department store in the burbs.
Yeah,
the Dillard's in Frisco.
It's fantastic. It's highly imaginative, but it really does happen.
Yeah.
And the book is full of great stories, and it makes sense here because there is this huge issue of feral hogs in Texas, and I don't know, it's fascinating. We're getting your stories on the show today too, so we're thrilled that you're participating. You're enjoying the conversation. If these kinds of conversations on radio for an hour at a clip are important to you, then please support the station that brings you this kind of programming. Just make an affordable contribution online at kera.org or call 888-694-6931. Please do it today. It's only the second day of the membership campaign, yet we've heard from almost 700 of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for your support of KERA. Those of you who we have yet to hear from, though, it's your turn. This is your moment. Please make the call or online contribution now.
You can go to KERA.org or you can call 1-888-694-6931. You might not really have thought about this, but North Texas is among the largest population areas in the country. And the number of listeners to any particular station determines NPR's program fees and PRI's program fees. It essentially determines the amount that we have to pay for the programs that come to us from other places. We have 400,000 listeners each week. The support of, if we could get everyone who listens on a regular basis to make a contribution in like the most modest amount, we would be done immediately with the fundraising drives. Your contribution really matters, and we really are speaking to you. Sometimes you might listen to these fundraising drives and think, well, I hope all those people give money who give money. Our fees continue to increase, so we need to continue to increase our supporter base in order to serve you. We're here for your benefit and really appreciate when you recognize the work that takes place and the resources required to bring you this programming.
888-694-6931. Online, do it online at KERA.org safely and securely. With a $120 contribution to the station, we will thank you with your very own copy of Jeffrey Green's new book, The Golden Bristled Boar. It's fascinating, as we said, and it's a lot of fun if you have a friend, or if you're interested in wildlife and where wildlife and not so wildlife intersect. This is a great gift for you to give yourself, in addition to the year of programming that you're helping to support when you contribute. So please don't wait. Please do it right now, online at KERA.org or via the phone at 888-694-6931.
I want to extend a big and sincere thanks to Janet and Dustin Potter in Wichita Falls, Robert Ricker in Dallas, Carolyn Putnam in Denton, Keshnell Penny in Mansfield, and to you if you are making a contribution now or have made one recently. Your money keeps the station going. It really is the lifeblood of KERA.
It is very important that you do your part right now. The reasons you value KERA are the very reasons you should support the station. If you get something out of the programming here every day, by all means, please make a contribution right now. Do it again online at KERA.org or on the phone at 1-888-694-6931.
You allow us to fulfill our mission of lifelong learning, and we know that you are lifelong learners. We'd love to hear from you now at KERA.org or 1-888-694-6931. Back again in just a minute with Jeffrey Green.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, an evening graduate program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is poet and author Jeffrey Green. He teaches at the American University of Paris and is author of the new book, The Golden Bristled Boar, Last Ferocious Beast of the Forest. You can join us by calling in to 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. We have an email here, Jeff, from someone concerned about the huge population explosion, wants to know, what is the most humane way to deal with this, and are our pets safe?
Okay. This population explosion is not just happening in Texas, but it's happening all through Europe and in Indonesia and places, also places where people are affected by poor people's gardens are being, ravaged. Mm-hmm. So it's a big problem worldwide, and there's so many different reasons why their populations are exploding. Mainly, it's because they don't have predators, and because the agriculture is sustaining them, and there is forest areas, reforestation, and issues like that. This is the sad thing for me. I don't know of a really humane way that they will be
controlled,
abated, or mm-hmm. controlled. It's kind of horrific what's going on, and the only way that seems to be used is through trapping and shooting them down, or what they call, where they just go through the woods and force the animals out and shoot them, which disturbs the whole forest here in France, for example. And they're even trying to control populations in, for Berlin, as I've mentioned before, where people are starting to fight against the people who are trying to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, you know, it's not like you can just sort of drop birth control pills or something, you know, or put birth control patches on them, or it's just going to be it's going to be a brutal situation, and it always I just don't know a personal solution myself. The only side that I think about is all this killing going to just be wasted animals, wasted meat or resources that way, and that there's some way to use them as a food source, even though, you know, we're not going to eat our way out of this situation. And there's a lot of these open-ended things that I bring up in the book, even though the book is very personalized. It's a story of my own journey into the subject itself and the people that you meet that are involved with the whole aspects of the wild boar. But it really is a disturbing question. And as far as our pets are concerned, it's good to keep them on a leash if there's anywhere where there are a lot of boars, and because they will. There's a natural battle between dogs and wild pigs.
I guess we can be glad that they are somewhat different than their ancient ancestors, the entelodonts. These things were as big as rhinos.
I had a lot of fun with that. Yeah, if you want to go back into the whole world of taxonomy, that to me was magical because, and I even got in touch with the American Natural History Museum because people were asking me, am I getting my taxonomy straightened out? Because it turns out that the whale and the wild boar are connected, have a similar ancestor.
Hmm.
And it's so amazing to think that a hoofed animal and a whale, you know, were related. But really, whales came from an animal that went back to the sea. And it was an animal that also had a line that came out of, that developed into the wild boar.
Hmm.
And I found that whole world fascinating. And I was writing the director of the American History Museum in New York, and he connected me with their expert, and he's saying, well, what are you getting at exactly? But this endolont was a fascinating creature that was just the what that was called the Terminator hog.
And,
but it said something to me about, you know, how undulates developed, you know, and how they would move from watering hole to watering hole, and hoofed animals developed on the planet. So that was when. It's part of the imagination, but it was my way to get into also talking about the different types of the family of wild boars.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Luke on the line in Combine. Hey, Luke.
Well, good day to you. I tell you, I've really enjoyed the talk, and it's very, very informative. I'm an old outdoors writer, and I've hunted hogs for a long, long time. But, you know, the difference in the European wild boar or the Eurasian boar and the feral hogs that we have in Texas, it's really almost like a total different animal to hunt, you know?
Yeah.
And I agree with most of what you've said. But these, you know, the Eurasian hog or the European wild boar, they're so much different. I mean, they have two coats. They have an inner coat of wool and then the long hair. And then these hogs are actually their descendants, you know, of domestic stock. But The interesting thing in Texas is the fact that there were European boars. A lot of people call them Russian boars, but I know that's not the correct terminology. But they were introduced back in the 30s. Many of our wild hogs here in Texas do have just a strain of the real European blood. Do you agree with that?
Totally. Everything you said is exactly right. But what's interesting is that once those feral swine go back, they start acquiring some of the qualities of the original Eurasian boar. I do write primarily about the Eurasian wild boar, but I do get into a whole section of my experiences in Texas, and that we're still having the same problems with the same animals, and they have so much in common in terms of the way their society works once they become wild, and the way they reproduce, and why they were such an important animal to domesticate, and why they also work so beautifully for the explorers and the conquistadors and even Christopher Columbus, who brought them to the West Indies. But everything you said is exactly right.
I have to confess, I try not to eat meat at all, but I sort of got hungry reading this book. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Department is so concerned about these things, it posts recipes for wild boar.
I love that. But they also post recipes for other, game.
Rattlesnake?
But rattlesnake, I don't know, but I don't remember if I saw one. But if you go on their website, they have an amazing list of recipes. But I happen to love that one because I know that the Texas Department of Wildlife, well, they also were very supportive of my last book about the Bamberger Ranch preserve down in the Hill Country. But they put this thing up, recipes about wild boar, and you know they would love people to eat them. And what I did is I took their recipe that they posted and discussed it with my mother and Mary, my wife, who loved to cook and to imagine what could be done. But the Texas Wildlife Department of Wildlife came up with a recipe based on the German schnitzel, we did a variation off of that because they had all the liquid smoke that they were putting on and the barbecue and a very, involved process. And we were just using things from our backyard, pretty much like sweet Mirabelle plums that were growing that we made into jam and just sort of simplified it and made it kind of, wonderful. And so it turned out to be a great recipe.
Jeffrey Green is a poet, author, and cook who teaches at the American University of Paris. His new book is called The Golden Bristled Boar, Last Ferocious Beast of the Forest. Jeff, it's been a great hour. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that this was a fundraising drive, although it was mentioned to me last night, but I am so delighted that in some way that this book could be a part of raising funds for National Public Radio. I've done a number of National Public Radio programs over the years, and I really do hope people contribute, and it's more necessary than ever, I think. So this was a special treat for me.
Well, we sure appreciate that. You have a great day.
Okay.
Thanks to all of you who have listened this hour, who have called in and emailed, and especially thanks to those of you who have decided to make your annual contribution during this program. If you'd like to make a contribution at or above the $120 level, we do have copies available of this really interesting and honestly fun book by Jeffrey Green called The Golden Bristled Boar, Last Ferocious Beast of the Forest. You can reserve your copy when you make a contribution at 1-888-694-6931. You can also go online and do this at the website at kera.org. Of course, the ways to pay are the same as they've always been. You can use a credit or debit card, or if you'd like, you can set up a sustaining membership, which is that monthly draw from your account into ours, or you can even mail in an old-fashioned paper check, although we don't have so many people doing that anymore, but we will happily process your money in whatever form you want to donate.
Wheelbarrow full of nickels.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't pay us in hogs, though. We really, we're not there yet. You never know. Give us a couple more days.
Our parking lot has that long thing. We could pen up some hogs down there.
I guess so. Wow. This is why they don't put us in charge of what kind of
facilities planning
and how we're gonna accept
or fundraising.
That's right. But do your part right now at kera.org or on the phone at 888-694-6931. What a fantastic conversation, and the stories we heard from our listeners as well.
I know,
Chris,
it's so much fun.
Great.
To me, Jeff, it's the essence of what public radio is. It's this thing that might seem like a topic that doesn't relate to you directly, and then you start to realize that it does. Particularly, you could live right in the heart of downtown Dallas, where we have not yet had any wild boar sightings. And yet, if you care about the environment, if you care about the rest of the state, if you care about agriculture, it all plays in. And then there's this really interesting question. A lot of people are morally opposed to hunting, and yet there's this overpopulation of animals that is damaging the environment in some areas. This was a sort of a fun discussion, and yet it raises some really interesting topics that matter to all of us. Having an hour to be able to talk about the same thing is a rarity and a luxury in broadcasting today. I'll tell you that, I've worked in other places where if I had to talk to Jeff Green, I might have a minute and a half. And it's not to say that there's no value to that, but it's much better to be able to really get into something, to interact with you and hear your stories and find out what your questions are to add to this. We're able to do that because instead of being commercially supported, we're supported by you, the people who listen to the show. You can join in this effort by going online now to kera.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931.
And the book is really it's a fascinating story, and there are recipes throughout.
Wild Schwein Schnitzel is what the Texas Parks and Wildlife.
There you go. It's right here on page 165. This is a really great way for you to thank yourself or thank someone that you care about who is interested in wild boars or just interesting.
We know you're out there.
Interesting culinary and natural history. When you join the station at the $120 membership level, we will gladly thank you with your very own copy of The Golden Bristled Boar.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. Your contribution to the station pays for the programming that you listen to. It's pretty much that simple. I mean, some of it pays for, staff salaries and people who make sure that the programs get to you every day on time and properly prepared. Some of it goes to equipment. But basically, it all goes into programming because we know that this is what's important to you. We are really careful with the money that you donate to the station because most of the staff also donates a bit of our money back to the station because we are listeners to public radio. We understand how it is to want to feel like your money is being invested properly in what you care about. And that's what we do for you here. Thanks to your generosity, we would not be able to bring you any of this if not for your contributions.
It is your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, online all the time at kera.org. You'll be able to go in a few hours and download the podcast of this interview. If you didn't hear the whole thing, you can listen to it again. If you did hear the whole thing and you just want to listen again, that's fine. A lot of you are podcast listeners. We hear from you every week, sometimes every day, that you listen to the podcast. We've heard from people all over the world who listen to the Think podcast. Well, you're eligible to support the station as well. Podcast production and distribution does have a cost that the station has to meet. And your $100 or $200 contribution for a year's worth of Think podcasts, which you get absolutely free, would help offset that cost. Please do your part right now online at kera.org or call 888-694-6931. Even if you're calling from the Netherlands or Thailand or wherever you listen, we'll answer the phone when you call 888-694-6931, no matter what time it is.
Yeah, in fact, feel free to test that out.
Please.
The website is always open. We never give the website even a lunch break or a coffee break. We also always have people staffing that phone line. So we would love to hear from you at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931. We know that for most of you, thank you gifts are not the primary motivator for making a contribution. But if for some reason you do want something that we haven't talked about the last couple of hours, you know, we have these books. If there's something else you've heard mentioned on another program and you thought, I'm waiting for them to talk about that again, go online and check it out or make that phone call. A lot of those things are sort of available throughout the fundraising drive. If that will make the difference for you, by all means, we want you to let us know and we'll take care of that.
888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. Please do your part. It's still just the second day of the membership campaign. We'd love to get as far as possible today so that we can successfully wrap this campaign up as soon as possible.
Your contribution comes into KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931 and helps us chip away at our overall goal of $625,000. So thanks for your help.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.